The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth.
Welcome to 9/11 Freefall. I'm the host, Andy Steele. So, did you know that AE 9/11 Truth's educational materials are represented in 30-plus languages? Now, talk about making it available worldwide. Well, today we're going to be joined by the lady that is largely responsible for that. Her name is Sandra Jelmy. She's our translations team leader. She's a resident of Canada. She speaks three different languages, and she manages a handful of volunteers that make sure our materials are understood by whoever is interested in this topic and wants to know more about what really happened in New York on that terrible day. Not only that, she's also a singer and a songwriter, and she made a song recently. We'll be talking about that too. It's related to 9/11 truth. But first, let's introduce her. Sandra, welcome to 9/11 Freefall.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So please elaborate on that very short background I gave about you. Tell us about yourself and your life. And how did you come to speak three languages?
Three languages? I was born in Canada, but to an Austrian mother. So I was raised in my mother tongue, which was German. My dad was Swiss, and he came from the French part of Switzerland, and so he raised me in French. And so those were my two main languages. And in Montreal, I was living in a very Anglophone part of the city, and I picked up English in the sandbox and went to English school, and that was pretty much how English developed. And it became ultimately my main language because that's the one I operate in most in my day-to-day life, in my family, at work. So, but then in Montreal, it's kind of standard to be bilingual. Everybody speaks English and French. And most people, I'd say, do speak three languages. There's a lot of immigrants here. And German is not the most common one. But, whether it's Italian or Spanish or Chinese, everybody speaks three languages almost. So it's not an anomaly. But I did end up studying translation, just because it was what seemed to make the most sense, considering that I love languages. And it served absolutely no purpose in my career, but it came in very handy when I was looking to help out AE. And that was in 2010, and I contacted the volunteer team. I said, you know, this is what I can do. Do you need help with anything? And he said, as a matter of fact, yeah, you could help us with the French translations. And so I started doing that. At the time, there was a different coordinator. And the person she was working with was Vibran, and he's still on the team. And in all fairness and in all credits to him, he's really the one who kind of keeps it all together. So we're really two coordinators. We do different parts on the team. I do more of the recruiting and more of the chasing people down when I see that there's a petition signer who speaks a certain language and see if they'd like to help. And he does a lot of the technical stuff. After we send out the translations, he puts them into a subtitling format, and he does a lot of things that I don't understand. But, you know, he does what he's good at, I do what I'm good at, and it works well together.
You know, this is going to be part of my advice segment of the show here, and I recommend that people try to learn a new language, or if you have young children, try to teach them when they're young. Now, when I was in the Peace Corps, we had to teach English, and what they told us, and you can tell me if this is true or not, Sandra, but when you have a young person, their brain is still developing, and it's easier for them to pick up different languages and deal with the contradictions between one language and another in terms of sentence structure and all of these different elements, they can rationalize it better than somebody who's been speaking one language their whole life. They get older, they might join Peace Corps, they might travel to another country or just try to learn it just as a hobby, and it's a lot harder for them to do it. So if you want your kids to be bilingual, get them started early on that, because it is a lot easier. Do you find that in your experience?
Absolutely. No question about it. I think the older you get, the harder it becomes, because you become entrenched in the way that your language works, and then opening your mind up to a different way of speaking just becomes increasingly more difficult. What happened in my case was, because my father was speaking to me in French and my mom in German, and then the English came in, up until the age of 4, I think, it was more or less one language for me. So I would pretty much say the first word that would come to mind, and, you know, they would just figure out what I was saying. And when I was 5, I started to sort it out in my brain that these were 3 different languages. And I stuttered for about a year. And my parents were really worried about that. And they thought that maybe, you know, that overloaded me or whatever. And went to see a specialist. And he said, "Listen, don't worry about it. Perfectly normal. Give her time and it'll sort itself out." And it did. And and then it was just free sailing from there. And, it just becomes second nature after that, yeah.
And where I was in the Peace Corps, the kids, the little kids, were speaking 3 different languages. They were speaking Russian, because they had been occupied by the Soviet Union for so long, and, of course, their native language, Uzbek. And then the schools, government was forcing them to learn English from me and other volunteers. So, their English wasn't as strong as their Russian or Uzbek, of course, but they could manage. They could manage to communicate certain ideas. And especially there were kids who would be at the high school level that you could talk to them, and it would be like you were talking to another Western English-speaking country person when you dealt with them. So it's amazing that people can process so much different information. I recommend people do try to learn languages when they're young and carry that with you. It'll help you out in the world. I mean, if you're a business person, you'll have to deal with different types of clients. It opens you up. You know, you'll have a lot of great job opportunities open to you. And it's just a good that you can communicate with people. You know, I see they're making these little cheater boxes now, or you can type something in to the computer and it will translate it. Like you say, okay, I want to have this translated into Korean, and then it will speak it to people. And it sounds convenient and everything. It's just, I don't know, I don't really want my voice being projected as a computer voice. I want people to hear me in my own voice.
It's not just that. I mean, there's a lot to be said about Google Translate itself has come a really long way. It used to be horrendous, and now you can actually, it shows up in some kind of a working format that you can actually do something with. But the thing is, the translation is only as good as the original text. And if you're dealing with written text, that's fine, because it's usually complete sentences where you have, you know, an actual noun and a verb and a period at the end of the sentence. But we've translated, interviews, you know, where people will start off a sentence and veer off in a completely different. And if you try to put that into any kind of automated translation system, the results would be horrible, because it doesn't know what to do with that. So you still have to, even though it's come a long way, you have to take all of that with a really big fat grain of salt. And you can have a lot of fun. And there's a reason why there's websites with the worst translations, because a lot of stuff happens in the process. So you still need a human being to do it.
Absolutely. I see our society trying to push us towards having computers do all our thinking for us. And I shouldn't have to state why that is not a good path for us to be on, why we should have to think for ourselves at least a little bit here from day to day and have our own talents to carry forth with, because computers can fail, and of course, too, I mean, when your brain just atrophies because you're not tending to your own cognitive needs, I just think that doesn't spell well for your future and for your quality of life. So, why are we talking about languages so much? And again, it's because Sandra's the head of our translation team, and 9/11 is such an important issue that it's not just that we do outreach to Americans. I mean, yeah, of course, people in the United States, it's very important to reach out to them. It happened in their country. It involves their government. But the support from people worldwide, I mean, there were, I don't even have the numbers at my fingertips here, but there were a number of different countries affected by 9/11, had their citizens died in those towers that day. They have a vested interest in this. And of course, what we saw happen after September 11th with the invasions of the countries just disrupted the entire world. So everyone has a vested interest in knowing what really happened on that day. Sandra, for you, just looking at the evidence presented by Richard Gage and AE 9/11 Truth, what did you consider to be the most intriguing that really brought you on board with this cause?
What brought me on board? I mean, the original trigger was the movie Zeitgeist, the documentary that I saw in 2008, and that was the first time that anything even made me realize that something was off with the whole story. And then it was just a lot of research, and you know, the more you research, the more you tend to gravitate towards the more credible sources, which was AE. And it was just really the scientific evidence that was so plainly, obviously presented. The documentary at the time that they had was Blueprint for Truth, and it was very easy to understand. I didn't have to be an engineer or an architect or any kind of scientist to understand what Richard Gage was presenting, and that was clear when you looked at the visuals and understood the dynamics of the physics. So it was really just logic, I guess, you know. It just seemed plain as day. And then you just see all that and you start wondering, you know, just who else knows about this? I'm just finding this out. I was late to the game, right? 2008. I found it was very late. Then you find out that you're not alone and that there's a lot of people who are very sane, who support the same idea. So you just, yeah, it's just a lot of research. But I mean, most of it was around AE because it was just what made the most sense. And yeah, it wasn't a big stretch to go from that to reaching out and saying, you know, maybe I can help them do something. And you mentioned the countries. I think it's 80 countries that were affected that had victims in those towers. So that's a lot of different nationalities. And the Europeans are a lot more open to this whole business than Americans are. They're looking at it mostly as, of course it was not. It didn't happen the way we were told. They're because they don't really have a horse in the race, right? They don't have this defensive mechanism that the American would have with cognitive dissonance and, you know, couldn't happen on my watch, couldn't happen in my backyard, couldn't be done by my government or whoever else was involved. So they have a more objective view on the whole thing. But they don't necessarily have the material to go with it. So combination AE being one of the most credible sources, coupled with let's get this out in as many languages as possible, makes it available to people pretty much anywhere, and we've covered 30 languages. They're not evenly represented, obviously, because we have a lot more help and volunteers in the main languages and in some of the more obscure ones. We're unbelievably deficient in a couple of languages that you would think would be front and center, where we would have volunteers throwing themselves at us to get the material out, you know, in those countries that were the most affected, like Urdu, which is the main language of Pakistan, Farsi, which is the main language of Iran. So we're desperate always for translators and volunteers in those languages. But, you know, French, German, Dutch, Spanish, Italian, that's all very fairly complete as far as the material we've done. And we've done AE videos, we've done the documentaries, we've done Blueprint, we've done ESO Experts Speak Out, we did David Hooper's Anatomy of a Great Deception, you know, we did the pamphlets, the street brochures. Now we're doing the website. You know, if an article comes up that, you know, it's not every article in the news section that comes up that's necessarily of interest to everybody in the world, but those that affect the evidence directly or the process of now with the grand jury petition and, you know, the firefighters or whatever. If there's an article that we think is going to appeal to a wider mass, then we, then we send it out to our translators, and they usually respond fairly quickly. So you can see on those articles, there'll be little boxes with the language letters inside, and you can pick and choose the one that that you're looking for if it's available. It's not always the same. It's a little uneven, but we try.
That's the main thing, is that we try. You know, there's no manual for how to do something like what we are doing here. Believe me, I've looked. I mean, I haven't looked for a literal manual on how to fight the government on 9/11, but I've looked for examples from history on what to do when you're faced with a situation like this, and I think this is pretty unique. I'm not saying it's the first time we've ever been lied to about and given an official story on something, but when you have an opportunity arise where you have a technology like the internet, where people can share videos, come together, have their brains meet up and say, hey, there's something wrong with this and we need to do something about it, that didn't exist until the time around slightly after September 11th. I know we had the internet on September 11th, but you didn't have YouTube and the internet as it has been in the last decade. So we're kind of writing the rules as we go, and we do the best that we can when it comes to these kinds of matters with translating articles. But we certainly need more people, as Sandra said. I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you what languages we are still a little bit deficient in terms of having volunteers that can translate them. And you say that in the Middle Eastern countries, Farsi, I forgot the name of the language in Pakistan that you mentioned, Urdu. We certainly need that. We would love that. I would love to have our materials circulated around the Middle East. I want everybody looking at this stuff. And it's not just the Middle East. I mean, Africa, Asia, wherever. But they need to know this. Of course, in those areas, as Sandra mentioned, this information is so relevant because it affects them as well. So please, if you are out there, you're a fan of the show, you're a fan of AE911 Truth, you got a little bit of time each week to donate, can really go towards a good cause, just that little bit of effort. And I think I said this either on the show last week or maybe during the webinar, but I one time heard this World War II war propaganda. So we'll acknowledge that's what it was, but it did have a good line. So I steal it from their effort and I apply it to ours. It's small things done well every day are going to be what win this for us. And that's such a good line. It's so applicable to the 9/11 Truth Movement and the volunteers. And there's so many people. And that's why Sandra's on here today, because she's one of these heroes in the background that you don't hear about. You know, it's just your articles are translated for you and it's like it's magic, but it's not magic. It's Sandra and it's her entire team of volunteers and Webrin and all of them, people working hard to deliver this to you. You should know who they are and their efforts should be celebrated. Now, I am very curious, because you know, I don't get involved very much in the translation team. You guys have that covered. I can imagine that printed material is probably easier to translate because the words are on the screen for you. You know, you look at it, you translate it, you look at it again, you translate it. But how do you translate the videos? Like, how does that process work? Is there a lot of pausing and playing and pausing and playing involved?
No, actually, not at all. What happens is that we get the transcript. There's usually one available that's made because someone had to write the stuff in the first place. Or we get a rough draft and we have someone, you know, put it all together so that it's accurate and reflects exactly what's being said. And then that's put into time-coded elements in an Excel file. So what you're really doing is you're just really translating the text in the column next to it. And there is, Vibran sets it up in such a way that your words should not exceed a certain length, because obviously, you know, your translation can't be twice as long as what's being said on the screen, because you're going to have overlaps you can't have. So there's a system that allows it, that kind of signals to you if your wording is too long for a specific cell, you know. And then once that's done, that Excel file goes back to Viva and he puts it into the subtitling format with the time codes, and so that they know exactly once they plug in the text, it'll follow exactly where it needs to. And then we have another third person whose name is Heimel, and he is also in Austria because Wieber's in Austria, and that's all just purely a coincidence because Austria is not a hotbed of 9/11 truth activity, but the chips kind of fell that way. And he does the final step of actually making a video out of it. So, yeah, and then he sends it back and then it gets uploaded, and that's pretty much it. So even though it's subtitles, right? The text will still appear on the screen. We only made an attempt at voiceovers once, and that was for Blueprint, and we learned to never do it again. It was extremely difficult, and at the time we were trying to also put it out in DVD format, and then we had the issue of North American versus European formats, which were not the same playing time, the same, I'm sure there's a technical term for it, but you had to take that into account. It was, long story short, it was just not worth doing ever again. So yeah, you have one voiceover video out there, and that's it. Everything else is just subtitles.
That is so fascinating, because I never knew about this process that you're talking about. I really did assume you guys were just writing down and pausing and playing, but this sounds very clever, what you guys put together and put into an Excel spreadsheet. And this is good advice for people who want to do a similar thing if they have their own organization or whatever, on how to do it. So that's very interesting. When you talk about voiceovers too, I watch these foreign films sometimes where they will do a voiceover, and it always seems like the voices are really exaggerated, where like the children will just have these really high falsetto voices. It almost sounds like a grown-up trying to pretend to be a kid. It always comes across as really funny. So I prefer subtitles if I can help it, unless I'm going to fall asleep to the movie, and then I don't want to stay up reading the movie. You know, I have to watch those ones when during the daytime. I'm curious about this too, because I ran into this when I had to translate some stuff in Peace Corps. The technical nature of what we do. Tony Zambodi or somebody talks about stiffener plates and shear studs and all of these things and these kind of deep engineering concepts. Does that cause any more difficulty in translating this? Because you have to determine what's being talked about in America and how that translates to the other language?
Yes, it's definitely an obstacle sometimes. There's not that many videos that go that much into technical details, but on the upside is if you've done it once, you've pretty much covered all the terms. So, you know, in most of our languages, we do have a relatively steady flow of volunteers that doesn't change that much over time. So someone who's done it once, who did that one video, you know, 7 years ago, will, you know, just have to recheck his old translations to find equivalent terms. And I mean, there's sites, there's terminological websites that give you the information you're looking for. And you have to be accurate. You have to, you know, you have to do your homework in looking for those terms. But most people who volunteer translate, they have some kind of translation background. You know, these are not people who just happen to speak the language, because otherwise we have them much easier time finding people. So they know what they need to do to find the right, you know, term to reflect what we're trying to say. And also we have everything proofread. So nowhere does one translation just go on by itself. It's always checked by somebody else for accuracy, for feedback, for tweaking, for, you know. So is it perfect? I'd like to think that it is, but it probably isn't always. But, you know, these are people who are not being paid for what they're doing. They're just doing it because they're committed to the cause. And like me, they just wanted to use their skills in this way. These are people who love to work behind the scenes. Whenever there's a project that requires any kind of activism, these are not the people who are coming to the forefront, because they like working in the dark. They do what they have to do behind the computer screen, and they send it back reliably. So, yeah, we have our safety measures in place, but sometimes it's hit and miss, and sometimes also volunteers drop out, you know. Life situations change. We have some volunteers who start off, you know, they're in their 20s, and, you know, they have a bunch of free time, and they can do this, And next thing you know, they get married and have kids and they're going back to school. And it's like, yeah, I can't do this anymore. So then we have to find somebody else. But well, that's okay, too.
Yeah, it's like the Army. You have new people rotating in and out. And sometimes they come back and sometimes they have to retire. But there's always new people waking up. Now, I want to make sure we talk about this because you wrote a song. You set it to a Green Day tune. Tell our audience about it.
Well, it's a fairly recent Green Day song. I think it's only 2 or 3 years old. And it came and went really quickly on the radio airwaves, but it just really caught my attention because, well, the song, musically, first of all, and it's called Troubled Times. Actually, I believe it came out when Trump was getting elected or about to be elected, and people were saying that it was kind of in reference to everything being in turmoil around that, but it's a very political song, and it just has elements in it that made me wonder if it had any kind of correlation with 9/11 because they refer to skyscrapers falling down. And obviously the title Troubled Times, you know, is very reflective of that. And there's just bits and pieces in the song where I was just scratching my head saying, were they trying to pass a message or not? And so I reworked it a little bit with my own lyrics and made a 9/11 truth song out of it. And everything that I feel strongly about in terms of why it's important to bring the truth out as much as possible.
And we're going to make that available to our audience here in the show description for this in case you want to listen to it and pass it around and let everyone else know about the talented people that we have here in the movement. I always love when people use their art to get messages out about this cause. I think it's the most creative way and it's the most interesting way, and it's a welcome change sometimes from the just constant talking and, you know, discussing these highly technical points. Now, last couple of minutes here. It's a question I commonly ask people. Volunteers, you've been in it since 2008, and that's about the time long time I've been in it, maybe a few years longer, 2006, but we're from the same high school, at least here. What keeps you in this? You know, something's got to keep you going, give you hope, and keep you wanting to do your work here with us. What gives you hope for the movement and why this is so important?
Okay, so what gives me hope is seeing that where I used to be labeled a crackpot a few years ago, more and more you're realizing that people are not finding it inconceivable that they may have been lied to. So I see a lot of progress in the reaction from the people around me, you know, that are not the choir, those people who you know, are pretty mainstream or conservative or who like to think that the government's always doing the right thing. And so that's, I guess, my main reason for optimism, if you want to call it that. Otherwise, even without that, even without the optimism, it's hard to explain. You know, it's an event that I'm not personally involved with. It didn't affect me directly in any way, but on many days, it's the first thing I think about when I wake up in the morning. It's the last thing I think about when I go to bed at night. And it's under my skin, and it's just such a massive, massive lie that has affected everybody in ways that I think most of us don't even realize. And it's the first domino that needs to fall. If we can make this one fall, then maybe we can question other things, because we know that there's no shortage of other kinds of lies and manipulation by whoever the elite is or the people involved are. And so, yeah, if you can expose that one, well, then maybe it'll teach people to think more critically about where we are in all this and our role to play in all this and where we want this world headed. So that's the best I can tell you. It's just a matter of conscience. It's just bigger than me. That's all.
Well, Sandra Gelmi, thank you for all of the work that you've done for us over the years, and keep it up, and thank you so much for coming on 9/11 Free Fall today.
Thank you to all of you.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, and every other Sunday night on BBS Radio at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele. Say have a great week. Good luck.